Blog Talk Radio.
Live to the Ron Don Show on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Don Allen at Studio A, and over at Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you tonight?
Fine under the circumstances, Mr. Allen, as we continue to have unacceptable chaos in our city. This has been a bloody 7 days, if you will, as you already know. Some of our listening audience are aware. We doubt if our domestic and international audience are aware per se, so much attention being paid to the violent events in Chicago also over the last 7 days. But we here in Minneapolis are almost under a state of siege. Early this morning, three African-American women, young women, on the near north side, ambushed by gunmen, if you will, and shot and seriously injured in the backyard of their home. And we're not talking about coming out of a nightclub or driving on the street or drive-by and et cetera. We're talking about gunmen who entered their property, if you will, knew where to locate them, opened fire. We are told that all three victims received multiple wounds. In fact, one of the victims was shot at least 10 times, the other two anywhere between 5 to 8 times, if you will. It appears that as many as 20, 22, 23 shots were fired at and into the women, if you will. And so this comes less than 12 hours after the mayor of the city and the chief of the police department, in a reversed order, you know, did a two-block walk through the African-American North community yesterday. The chief at 12:30, the mayor, who did not return to the city of Minneapolis until 3 o'clock yesterday when her flight arrived at the Hubert H. Humphrey International Airport, and she came by convoy, almost armed convoy, because it is, I got to tell you, Mr. Allen, North Minneapolis is like a war zone. But one of the things that has happened is that about 14 days ago, a group of African-Americans, male, female, came together to talk about solutions, really.
Okay.
I mean, you have to know your history, but you better have some solutions. And so what's happened is that soon-to-be basketball, high school basketball Hall of Fame inductee Larry McKenzie, currently the coach at Perennial Power North High School of Minneapolis, longtime coach at Minneapolis, Patrick Henry, and Alfred Flowers, community activist, and et cetera, joined by a group of African-American women, talked about and initiated a meeting. The second of those meetings took place this morning from 11 to 1, and I have to tell you, the attendance almost tripled. There were over 70, 75 individuals, a broad cross-section. They were able to bring in the heads of the homicide and assault units, as well as one of the veteran black patrol officers, one of the few that we have, who I think talked about some very important things, but gave background and substance to just how serious this situation is. As I said, Don, this has been a bloody 2014, and so I know that some folks have been texting us indicating they'd like to give some observations, and certainly we will accommodate that. But there was a very positive meeting this morning. it was kind of interesting because there appears to be an attempt to maybe kind of circumvent, I hope that's not what it is, the 4th Precinct, North Minneapolis Precinct there on Plymouth Avenue, has a group called CARE. I'm not sure what that's supposed to mean. And they were summoned into an emergency meeting at 8 o'clock this morning. What they have to offer, I have no idea. In fact, I'm still waiting for the chief's so-called Negro Advisory Committee, if you will, to come up with some solutions. You know what I'm saying? They were highly touted. They were introduced to the general public in October of last year, if you remember, Mr. Allen. And
yes, I do.
Not been heard
yes,
from since. So,
yeah. No, they've gone into hiding for a while. That's pretty
Yeah. It appears like that because they certainly aren't offering any substance as it pertains to what to do with this situation. A number of young people, if you will, particularly young African-American men, were brought in by the group known as COI, who has been involved in some real sensitive discussions and negotiations trying to bring about some truce. We clearly need a truce. I think you would agree, Mr. Allen. I think our listeners would agree. We need to have a truce and try to get the warring factions to cease and desist, if you will. But, you know, when you're talking about a sobering experience, when you have gunmen, you know, actually approach a home, go into the backyard, open fire, firing as many as 20, 21, 22, 23 shots, if you will, and shoot three African-American women, young women, you know, an average of, you know, 8, 9, 10 times, you got to be a little fearful for the safety and the future of the African-American community. I mean, when you see this kind of pattern, we're just an incident away from some another, and we've had that, unfortunately, too much, too frequently in this community, a 4 or 5-year-old child shot and killed. You know what I mean? You can see it coming. Just too much gunfire. I mean, we've got gunmen running in packs of 2, 3, 4, 5, firing their weapons all throughout the north side. But South Minneapolis also is not immune. And I know that maybe one of the callers that we'll get is M, who lives on the south side, because they clowned out on the south side, particularly around Powderhorn. And there's an area emerging, Mr. Allen, at 25th and 11th Avenue South, that has become a hot zone, okay? A lot of shooting going on out there. Heavy concentration of Somalis and Native Americans and Mexicans. So, you know what I'm saying? Anyways, we'll get into additional reflections made, but we have a couple of callers. First of all, let's give out the number, Mr. Allen. The phone lines will be open. We'd like to know the community's thinking about the level of violence and if there's any way that we can deal with it.
Yeah, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And you're listening to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio. Yeah, Mr. Edwards, I've kind of been a little bit set back at the number of different violent events. And these, like we last show, we talked about the three amigos talking to Governor Dayton. And for whatever reason they went to do that for, you know, is unknown. But well, it's known, but it doesn't make any sense because it seems like more people, there's an uptick in this violence. And there's a lot of contributing factors, but we still, you know, like you said earlier, we have to know our history, but we still don't have anyone that's going to directly address it, it looks like. And I think we might have a caller here that's ready to go, Mr. Edwards.
Okay,
let's
call her in.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Well, you two, I'm telling you, you should be on national radio or something, heading up this, spearheading this movement to save our youth.
Thank you.
My name is Barbara.
We appreciate it. Yeah.
I just have to say I love you guys, and I've known Mr. Edwards for many, many years, and what I appreciate about you two is that as men and black men, can I say black or do I have to say African-American?
I'll say what you want to say.
Okay, thank you. Okay, because I call myself black. I've been to Africa many, many times, but I'm not African yet. I mean, really, when you got to pick your meat out of the out of the outside. So, but I'd like to just compliment you two on what you do and how you are voicing with diplomacy, really restraining yourself for what's happening when we see our kids dying in the streets like we have here recently, and not just Minneapolis, Chicago, but we've got people coming in on the border, blah, 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 and our kids are being neglected to this, you know, to this end. It's really kind of crazy, but I love solutions. You know, when I ran for Congress, Donnie, you, I can say this publicly, you chaired my 2008 run at Mr. What's our congressman's name? I keep forgetting. Ellison. When you saw that, you saw how we went in and we had solutions and things that we talked about in 2008 are happening right now because of this mission this guy is on to ignore what's going on. Now he's ignoring the Somali community, which is a slap in the face because he told me he really didn't have to run because he knew the Somali community would vote for him, and they're very disappointed in his what he calls leadership. I got big quotes around that. So I really thought about it when we talked before, and then also being on the show tonight. And I've got some suggestions for solutions.
Okay.
And I don't know if you guys have done this before, but on the show, it would be really fun to hear from some of the young people what they're thinking. I walked the streets when I ran for Congress. I heard young men say, look, you know, I'm living with this girl. He didn't call her a girl. He you know, referred to her frequently as a B word because that's normal in the streets now.
As well as NIG, right.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Mm-hmm. And kids have, you know, without an education and without dads, you know, working and showing boys how to do that, how to fish and get out there and go get it, you know, get that paycheck. They have no idea. They have absolutely no idea how to connect all these dots. And so I'm not putting the kids down by any measure. But the kids were saying, you know, like boys would say to me, this is my sanctuary. This is how I survive. I live with this girl. Now, when she's tapping his brother or his cousin or, you know, his friend, he's going to have to move, and he's going to have to move his little, you know, party out of her house. Well, he goes after the guys that's coming in. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
That was one of the things.
Let me say this. That is interesting. That is very profound because a couple of people in the meeting this morning in North Minneapolis attended by over 70 individuals, there were a number of women and a couple of gentlemen who know the streets. They you know, they come from the culture. They are committed to trying to do the right thing. And it's ironic that they said exactly that. In fact, a woman by the name of Queen Nucci, who has a long history and involvement, said exactly the same words, Ms. White, that you're saying, that, you know, 90%, maybe even 95% of these shootings and et cetera are behind young ladies. And I think that a lot of people didn't totally understand, and in fact, you just enunciated it with even greater detail and specificity when you talk about pattern. What, I'll put it like this. I'll do the legal thing, pattern and practice. And that's a hell of an observation you made about, you know, the breakup comes and, you know, homie is told he got to leave. He can't stay there in the apartment, you understand, and et cetera. And the next thing you know, there's conflict between the old boyfriend, the new boyfriend, and God help us if they are on different sides of the fence as it pertains to their affiliations and et cetera, right? And I have to commend you because those are some of the things that were discussed this morning in the meeting, and it was an eye-opener, yet we had people sitting there who are aware of this, but whose expertise, knowledge, and et cetera, is not being utilized by the powers to be because they're not the right kind of black people. You understand what I'm saying? Just as you wouldn't be the right kind of black person, even though you've just brought wisdom. But I have to say that to you, that those are some of the discussions that took place this morning.
Well, and you know I wasn't there, Mr. Edwards. I'm in Fargo right now.
You sure weren't. I know it.
So you know that.
I know it.
I would have been there if I could. But my my piece is, when I walk those streets, I can admit, you know, my son ran something on Facebook the other day. And what he ran on Facebook was, you know, 34, he's younger than that. 34 years ago, Bob Marley played in Ireland, and that would have been a wonderful memory to be at the Bob Marley and the Wailers concert 34 years ago in Ireland. And I texted my son, you know, I commented on his post, if I were at the Bob Marley concert 34 years ago, I would be so loaded, you know, on that ganja or whatever they had there. I wouldn't even remember the concert because that's what I did 34 years ago. I mean, that's how I rolled. And so when I talk to these kids now, I'm listening to them from their guts, and they're talking survival of the fittest. They're trying to survive in a culture, in a city that doesn't care about them. They have to eat. There's food stamps there. They have to sleep. There's a bed there. They have to be warm. It's wintertime in Minneapolis. You know, during the cold winters, kids have to go somewhere. Mom's not around. Dad's long gone. In fact, you know, kids find out who they really are at family reunions, and they're like, oh, God, I've been hitting that. They find out that's their first cousin. So we're in a, or their brother or their sister, because they don't know where Dad left, you know, all of his inheritance. So we're in a position now where kids have to start from scratch on how to communicate. And for them, weapons is how it works, because you don't, you know, if somebody's coming at you, you're just going to protect yourself. And the same in housing, the same with food. We're talking what we've done. And I'm going to say this, Mr. Edwards, and I'm going to say this, Mr. Allen. The Democrats have reduced us to animals with the welfare system. I mean, absolutely. There's kids with threesomes going on. There's all kinds of, they don't know how to, they don't, if you bring up anybody in history, they don't even know who Dr. King is. I talk to kids who don't know who Dr. Martin Luther King is.
That's
they
right.
Don't know who
That's
Malcolm
right.
X is. I mean, you can't That's even right. talk about, you know, poets, and you can't talk about Langston Hughes. That's not conducive.
Oh my God, that's unknown.
Anywhere
yes,
near their
yes.
brain cells are going. But I've watched this in the last, I mean, I've watched for 40 years. I mean, my dad, when he was alive, would not allow us to touch welfare cheese. That cheese made the best grilled cheese sandwiches. That cheese was off the chain. It had grease rolling to the top. Do you remember that commodity cheese?
And would send your cholesterol right up there to the top with it.
Oh, yeah, but you were so happy to be dying from cholesterol overdose.
Yes.
Because
oh, yeah.
So good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But my
yes.
dad
yes.
said, if you bring that in the house, I'll kill you. You cannot bring that in because it represents a curse. And my dad saw that many years ago, and I had a question, Mom, and I don't want to go on. I'm just saying, what has happened in the cities is we've got to deal with the whole premise, and I don't believe it's a false one. Our kids have been reduced to little animals, and
yes.
until someone gets in and culturalizes them, that's not even a word, but and loves these kids and deals real with what's going on, there's nothing happening. I know the Democrats are not going to ever let us open up an orphanage. Mary Jo tried that. There's not going to be anything that, you know, we can say from a church to get a group together to live, because they're going to come in and they're going to say, you need this and this and this, but when they get done policy and procedure, it isn't going to happen. And they'll pay $25,000 to the quickest character to, you know, to badmouth it. So it's going to, you know, it's going to go on until we can get our hands dirty.
All right.
So that's all
okay.
I have.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well,
be safe up there in North Dakota.
Can you guys
all
put
right.
me in the queue? Because I want to listen
yes.
to the show.
Sure.
Yes,
all right.
Sure.
Mr. Allen's our technician. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. And you are in the queue. We have another caller, Mr. Edwards.
Let's get the caller. Let's get him in.
Okay. You're live on the air. Is it Coach?
Yes, it is.
Hello. Hey, how are you, sir?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes,
we
yes,
can hear you real well,
perfectly.
Coach. Go right ahead.
I'm just listening. So I was just I heard you guys talking about the meeting today, and so I just wanted to call in.
Right, Coach. Let us do this, because we are a community that has been kind of bastardized and maligned, that we are not attempting to address this chaos, this genocide that is taking place. Of course, I know that not to be true. And on that particular point, could you share with us and with our listening audience domestically, internationally, a little bit about the thinking and the philosophy that caused you and Alfred Flowers and a group of African-American women to decide to put something together and in an immediate way based on the what's happening, including the most recent tragedy, three African-American women gunned down in the backyard in North Minneapolis this morning. Could you just walk us through your thinking and your expectations?
Well. So first of all, I think we discussed this two, 3 weeks ago. About two, 3 weeks ago, I was invited to be part of a group that was to go and listen to the mayors of both cities and receive the report from the president's office in regards to the 100 days of the Brothers Keeper program or Brothers Keeper initiative. And so I just came out of that meeting a little bit disappointed. One, in that, you know, people seem to always make the assumption that there's nothing happening in our community and that there are some of us that are doing the work. And so, you know, from that conversation, we decided to try to bring some people together just to kind of, you know, first and foremost, I mean, I think it's important that black men in the community step up and take their rightful place. And we haven't done that. And so we need to be involved. And then we need to come together, you know, check our egos at the door, come together about how we're going to solve some of these issues in our community. And more importantly, we, you know, in a discussion that we were having a couple of days ago, I just mentioned to Al that I think, you know, in terms of what's going on in our community with the violence, that if he's going to do something, the public safety needs to go to the forefront of that. And as I said this morning, I mean, you know, resident of the community, works in the community, I'm just concerned. You know, I'm a father, I'm a grandfather, and I'm concerned about what's going on with our kids, what's going on with our community. And again, I mean, you know, the violence is one thing, but I think you and Donna talked about it. I mean, our real issue is economics and poverty. And until we begin to have that discussion about how we're going to make some changes around jobs and opportunities in our community, we're going to continue to deal with some of the violence that goes on. So.
Okay. Mr. Allen, you any questions of Coach McKenzie? Because
no,
I have a couple of observations. But
please,
associate, Mr. Allen, anything, Don?
No, I don't.
Go ahead. Okay. Coach McKenzie, we just had a caller from North Dakota, an African-American young lady that had resided here for many years. She's doing some research and et cetera, Ms. White. And I listened to something that she said. You and I were sitting there looking at each other when, as an example, Queen Nucci and some others talked in terms of the genesis, unfortunately, for some of this violence and conflict, and much of it tied into the whole economic situation. And Ms. White, just minutes ago, talked in terms of a particular scenario, which you and I know is unfortunately in place, and that is when relationships deteriorate and, you know, person's told they got to move on and et cetera, they take exception to it, things happen. Folks feel like the only way to settle a grievance is with the most powerful weapon they can get their hands on. And so I think there's real difficulty in getting the quote-unquote system to understand that we understand that we have been pushed off of the economic cliff, if you will. Give us some of your thinking, because one of the things that you did today at the gathering attended by over 70-some citizens of our community was that you've already set up working committees. And one of the things that was recommended by Dr. Peter Hayden that I fully concurred with, you also touched on it, is that we need to develop a position or, quote-unquote, manifesto or white paper. I'll call it a black paper, that we need to articulate immediately, and you discussed the 5 points. Could you share with us some of your thinking on the 5 points?
Well, you know, so one of the things that we have to do, as you said, Ron, I think all too often, long-time residents, you know, I've watched folks like yourself, and I think all too often we take a back seat, and it's time that we stop being reactive and we have to become proactive. And in that, I think part of coming together, you know, if we can come together and begin to work together, then we can begin to put some things in place that allows us to say to the majority community or to those that are in power that this is our expectation. These are the things that we want, and we intend to hold you accountable. And we're tired of really being in a passenger seat. There are those of us who have lived it. There are those of us who are living it. And so, therefore, we appreciate you know, we appreciate your thoughts. We appreciate those things, but we got to begin to play a role in our own destiny and in terms of what's going on with our young people. And it's time for us to come to the rescue instead of sitting waiting for someone else to do what obviously is not going to happen. You know, and again, I said one of my things, and go back to our initial conversation, one of my concerns was with the Brothers Keeper. I mean, I watched 14 years ago a group of people get together around the African American Male Project, you know, and that was supposed to address the unemployment, the achievement gap, and all of those kinds of things, and there were some resources that was thrown out there. And 14 years later, it's not better, it's worse. And so part of me stepping in and saying something is that, you know, I can't sit by and allow that to happen again. And again, I mean, it's not. I realize that it's not something that I can do by myself, but I just think that we have very talented people in our community, in all walks of life. And so, therefore, if we can, again, check our egos at the door, use our resources, and use what, you know, I keep telling, I mean, we keep trying to go back and reinvent the wheel, but there are some things that have happened in this country from a historical standpoint that we can learn from. And I believe in Sankofa. And so I say that we have to go back and fetch it, and we've got to go back to those things that have worked for us historically. And when we, you know, civil rights wasn't just about marching and visuals and all of those kinds of things. I mean, you got to have some action. You got to have some action. You got to do some things. And so I think Dr. Hayden talked about the first step, and that is to bring together those group of young men who are actually out there in the midst of it. But getting them to the table, putting the appropriate resources around them, and then, you know, whatever it takes, going downtown. And I think you raised the question today. Unfortunately, I mean, the folks that came through the community on Tuesday didn't feel that it was important enough to make time to be present today at the meeting with the community.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that observation and et cetera, because I've seen that happen far too frequently, and it was the genesis of my opening comments about in the discussion with Barb White, calling us from North Dakota, that this philosophy that has emerged, and you and I have been around a long time, and we've seen it 14 years ago and longer, and I've been an activist since 1959. This ploy that is played by the opposition, if you will, to convince people that there are certain people within your community that, you know, turn us off, and in other words, them. The power community, the white community, and their handmaidens. And so we don't think they should be at the table. And you just touched on something about 3 minutes ago. When you do that, you lose a tremendous amount of the reservoir of intellect and vision and expertise and et cetera that you need to pull us up out of this situation that we're in. And I really watched it swamp us, if you will, Coach, in the last couple of years. There's these groups that all of a sudden have come together, and the first thing that they do when they go to meet with the boss is to say, well, boss, you know, I'm just as opposed to so-and-so, to Coach McKenzie, to Mr. Allen, to Alfred Flowers, to you know, Queen Nucci, to Miss White. I'm just as opposed to their boss as you are. And so, you know, many of the bosses are much more astute than I think than you know, the handmaidens realize that they are. And, you know, boss smiles. He smiles because that's what he wants to hear him say. But he has to say, because he is just the opposite as it pertains to the survival of his race and his people. And he says, look at this fool. Okay. Uh-huh. And I say that in the context that when folks who are supposed to be representing the interests of our community do that, you know, the man that's manipulated them to that, you know, both nodding and shaking their head that you concur, are actually calling us that are playing that kind of game, look at this fool, okay? And that's mm-hmm. why I thought that we had some significant movement today in that meeting. And I have to say to you, Coach, it is desperately needed, and there are times in history when it is the right time to do the right thing, and I think we're moving ahead, because there's too much discussion going on in other communities about the fact, and I know that's one of the things you and I discussed that bothered you about the Brothers Keeper, when a young woman got up and talked in terms of how they would manage and give us a sense of direction. And could you just walk us through your feeling at the time that statement was made?
Yeah, I as I said to you, I just felt very, very, at that moment, very disrespectful, disrespected in that this young female would stand up in the room, you know, around the discussion of young men of color and say, you know, we've been meeting, we have this collaborative that we put together to address these issues. And again, I was like, okay, well, I mean, I know I work with at least 60 young men on a regular basis and have done it consistently for a number of years, and I guess my invitation is in the mail. And so, you know, and again, so that was kind of, for me, you know, saying, I mean, we've got to do something different. And I'm like you, I'm very hopeful. You know, I thought the turnout was really good today. I'm very hopeful that we'll continue to make progress, that we'll continue to be able to communicate with each other. And maybe for the first time, it'll be our plan, you know, that we're working off of, you know, and as a coach, I know the importance of having a good game plan. So, you know.
Yes, sir. Yes, you do. That's why you're going into the Hall of Fame. Congratulations.
We've got to put together a good game plan.
That's right. Coach, appreciate you taking the time to share with us some of your reflections, and specifically your philosophical reflections. Because God knows that we've got to put something together which is being worked on right now, and it has to be a difference maker, or we're going to be going to more funerals. We're going to be seeing more of our young men incarcerated. I'm reminded of the statements by Spike Moss at the closing of the meeting today, and many, many, many others in the room, male and female, who talked in terms that, We're talking about the survival of the species. You know what I'm saying to you?
That's right. That's right.
That's what
right.
it is. All right. Mr. Allen, you have anything, sir? If not, we want to thank Coach.
Well, thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you, Coach. Take care.
Good night. Yep.
All right. Mr. Allen must be on his text machine. Coach Larry McKenzie, one of the organizers of something extremely important. Has come into play at a time when we desperately need a plan, and as Coach McKenzie said, our own plan, if you will.
Exactly.
One that is crafted and articulated by those who, quote-unquote, are the victims who are looking to survive. We're not looking to commit suicide. Nor are we looking to fly the white flag, which is a reflection that I make in my column in the Spokesman Recorder. Mr. Allen, you back with us? What do we have?
Yes,
any other calls?
I am here. We are stacked and racked. Let's go. We have another caller. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, how y'all doing tonight?
Real good.
Doing great. How are you?
Not too bad, gentlemen. Let me say that this is exactly what one of the starting points is address to address the issues in our community is to speak freely and openly. And I think to invite all of the community that wants to attend, that has initiatives and ideals, forward to speak on them. I would like to take a little exception to Mrs. White's comments when she spoke of that the Democrats here in town are to fault for some of the things that we go through. Ms. White, we had a Republican governor for many years that did not put any job initiatives forward, didn't put any jobs planned forward, took office. The African-American unemployment rate here was at 17%. When he left office, it was at above 17%. So, you know, Ms. White, I don't think it's always boils down to Democrat versus Republican thing versus most of us have to take our heads out of our behinds and realize that we have to care about ourselves in order to do something.
Now, Jamar.
Yes, sir.
Well, hold
yes,
on, because Miss Barb Davis White is live on the air with us still in the background, and you know, you made a statement to me a while back, you know, you my brother, but I'm going to have to, like, break it down, that Governor Dayton created 40,000 jobs.
80,000 jobs.
I don't understand how he did that. Can you walk me through the steps in the time that we have here, a couple minutes?
Well, here's the thing. When you, I don't know how we can deny the fact that we have the second lowest unemployment rate in the nation. We have a surplus that we haven't had. We were into debt during the whole time of the Clinton administration. When there are 80,000 jobs created, that was due to manufacturing, that was due to the fast food industry, and other positions. We can't deny the of what the man has done. He has been.
I can't see it. I can't see it. I can't see it. I know that the black unemployment rate is in the low to mid-20s. It is not down around 6% or what you're hearing on the mainstream media. I know that there is a vast number of 18 to 30-year-olds just in certain pockets of the Twin Cities that don't have jobs, that don't have education or training for that matter. So I know that the African-American unemployment rate along with the Native American employment rate are very high. And if this government, if this governor has created 80,000 jobs in those sectors, our community has not seen those jobs because the unemployment rate is – go ahead.
Well, let's say this, though. Let's not lay this all at the foot of Governor Dayton, who's only been here 3.5 years.
I can't use that for a cop-out. I'm laying it on.
It's not a cop-out.
Everywhere the Democrats have been, there has been blight. Let's look at Detroit. They've shut off people's water in Detroit, okay? Let's look at Chicago in President Obama's own Senate district. Boarded up buildings. Schools closing everywhere. Everywhere that the Democrats have a stronghold, the black people are in poverty because they take in a higher because they take the black vote for granted, okay?
Oh, good.
And that's the bottom line. I mean, really, what problem has government solved? Can you name one problem the government has solved?
Well, the government has given us health care. That's number one.
The government doesn't give me health care.
You have your own. But here's the thing, though.
Tell me, who was that a problem for?
Let me answer this for you. When Republicans quit refusing, get off their butt, get off their hands, and quit disrespecting this president, and put forth some serious job initiatives and job plans, and then quit fighting this president at every single thing he does, perhaps the unemployment rate among African Americans will go down. When he put forth the initiative, my brother's keeper, okay, when the monies needed to be allocated, what did the Republicans do? Name me one Republican that voted for and my brother's keeper initiative. Not one.
But you have to read. My brother's keeper, and Coach McKenzie just got done talking about that. My brother's keeper, this money does not go straight to black folks, ever. Okay? Just like the banking bailout, that didn't go to black folks either. And so my brother's keeper is basically a public relations ploy that goes to local agencies, philanthropic, the bigger ones, because black folks, we don't make guns and we don't have philanthropic agencies that work worth a damn. And so, and then it's doled out in pennies. And where are the women in this picture? Okay, my brother's keeper, well, women are getting shot in North Minneapolis. Young guys are getting shot in North Minneapolis. And there's no process, in effect, to address this. And we jump from Governor Dayton, who I was talking about because of the statement that you made, to President Obama. Let's keep President Obama for the time being out of this picture. Because we know that the Republicans are battling President Obama on a national. That's what they do. That's politics 101 or 1110. For lack of a better number. And so you're looking at, I'm looking at the local infrastructure. The local infrastructure is telling us that there's something wrong. When MnDOT, the Minnesota Transportation, Department of Transportation, can spend over a quarter of $1 million and only give one black person or black company $918 in a contract, that's ridiculous. Something is wrong. The system is broken. Who's in charge of that system? Governor Mark Dayton.
What?
Governor Mark Davis said last year.
Though, Don?
Well, let me finish. Last year he said, give MnDOT 6 months. I have the video.
Okay.
I have the video. Just give MnDOT 6 months, and we'll come back and revisit. Well, we've given MnDOT a year, and they're still coming back with the same thing. That falls right back in Governor Dayton's lap. We got tons of callers online. I'm going to give you about 20 more seconds, and then we're going to move on. Go ahead.
Okay, 20 more seconds here. Where is the black community leaders? You can lay this at the foot, right on the lap of Governor Dayton, but it takes someone like myself, like yourself, someone that we put in charge to get in front of the camera and in front of those leaders that are in Congress to say, look, you have to set some type of agenda. Here's an agenda that hires minorities. There has to be a certain amount of minorities hired. But when you have the Spike Mosses and other community leaders lacking that, worried about lining their pockets instead of going acting, where are the jobs that, where are the resources for our community? That's who you blame. You can't blame us, because if this governor highlights, goes out and handpicks blacks, he will lose an election. It takes
he's already done that.
I remember LBJ when LBJ told Martin Luther King, listen, I want civil rights, but you have to make me do it. Where is the black leadership going to the governor, making him put forth job initiatives or incentives to hire blacks?
I'll tell you where they are. They have the governor's nuts on their chin. Thank you. Mr. Edwards?
Gentlemen, it sounds like that you are more on the same page than you are on opposite sides of the books. It's interesting to listen to both of you because the caller actually was talking in terms of balance. I don't take it that he was being real critical of Ms. White. He was just saying let's proportionally, lay on the table the cards that indicate, non-productive actions by both entities and et cetera. And, of course, when we do that, we need to talk in terms of big corporate and et cetera and et cetera. So, I don't think there was that much necessary difference.
Yeah,
and then
difference,
I noticed the caller began to talk in terms of leadership. There was a quote in this morning's paper by a woman named Lisa Clemens. And it was as a part of the being with the mayor yesterday doing her two-block walk through North Minneapolis. And Ms. Clemens made the observation that we're going to have to do some internal examination and clarification of our own roles. And really, in a very diplomatic way, that's what Coach McKenzie was saying. And, it'd be interesting to have some reflections similar to the exchange that just took place, Don, about what people are, what they are expecting from those who say that they are in positions of authority and power, and the scenario that I gave in talking to Coach, where we are too quick to accept when the system says, yeah, but we really don't feel comfortable being at the table with Don Allen. We don't feel comfortable being at the table with Spike Moss. We don't feel comfortable being at the table with Lisa Clemens, if you will. But we feel comfortable being at the table with this particular group and maybe the leadership council, if you know what I'm saying. For a moment we were getting ready to embark upon a challenge a successful challenge when there seemed to be a reorganization of the NAACP in December of last year. And you were a part of that, Mr. Allen, and I thought that y'all were going to make some moves. And I've never seen anything disintegrate, explode, and disappear as quickly as I have the NAACP, which no one even talks about anymore. You know, just 3 months ago, 4 months ago on these programs, that was a hot item and et cetera. And all of a sudden, no one is saying anything about it, but I'm aware that representatives of the NAACP are making appearances, talking to high-ranking officials and talking about that they can get 1,000 jobs, 500 GEDs, if you will, and et cetera. So we're going to have to, as this Ms. Clemens said, we're going to have to do some internal, you know, cleansing and research, if you will. But let's get the calls in, because phone lines are open. This is a critical time in our city.
Yeah, we have a stack of calls waiting, but you just said something I need to touch on before I get back to these calls. Hold on, calls. I'm getting right back with you. You said something about people feeling uncomfortable or comfortable with certain people. And this is something that's very interesting here, because this has been bugging me, because M-Sure, Communities of Color, will receive $750,000 to promote M-Sure. Now, Mr. Edwards, you have your publishing empires. I have my publishing empires. And I was reading this here. M-Sure, StairStep Foundation, Babbitt and Johnson, $100,000. Minneapolis Urban League, $100,000. Pillsbury United Communities, $100,000. Was among the local organizations that were awarded funds. None of those organizations have even a fraction of the platforms we have. I haven't gotten a call. I'm pretty sure people from M-Sure would truly like, you know, 60,000, 70,000 listeners in the Twin Cities to and across the globe to hear about their product and how to sign up on these on our respective platforms. But then again, you get into this zone of these stratified minerals with nothing to undergird it, and they're doing their own thing. You know, I expect new Mercedes on the road, maybe a down payment on a new house, or, you know, buying some lingerie for that young lady down the street. But anyway, caller, you are live on the air. You've been holding a long time. Go ahead, please. Caller, go ahead. 6538. Okay, there goes 6538. Let's go to the next one. Okay. Yes, caller, you're live on air. Go ahead, please. 79. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, caller. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Yes.
Turn down the television or whatever you have in the background. Can you do that?
Oh, I'm just going to move to another area if that's possible.
Oh, okay.
That's great.
All right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was just listening to the conversation of the gentleman that just got off the air, and he was making a statement about the unemployment rate. Mr. Don Allen, you are correct. There is 18% of black unemployment rate here in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And
all
the
right.
reason why they claim that there is such a high rate of unemployment is because of the disparity in education.
Okay.
When you have almost 50% of black youth dropping out of school or not graduating, then they're not in a position to hold a job, or they don't think they're qualified to hold a job.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was discussing with one of the youth today, or some of the youth today, that there is 1.1 million people, black people, in power positions of the 500 Fortune companies that we did not know, that there's 1.1 million black people that are executives and CEOs and chairmen over these 500 Fortune companies.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get this right, caller. There are how many African Americans who are chief executive officers of 500 Fortune companies? What did you say? What was the percentage again?
1.1 million.
That's impossible. There's no way that number can correlate to anything.
That's impossible.
That's an impossible number. I thought you were going to say that the number of African Americans who hold positions of CEOs and et cetera in Fortune 500 companies is more like 1.5%.
No, that is actually true.
Yeah,
Okay, now let me finish.
Just think about the math that you just gave us. It's impossible to have 1.5 million. There aren't that many Fortune 500 companies.
If you look at that, there are 38 million African Americans in this country. That's only 1%. That's only 1.5% if you look at the math.
38 million would be a low number.
There is 1 million. There is 1 million black people that are in high position in the CEO position in the 500 Fortune company. Look it up. Now, let me go on to move on.
And who provides that statistical information? Because I just can't in good conscience accept that information is authentic by any shape, form, or fashion.
I want you to go look it up on the net as we speak. Okay, now let me go.
Already have. It's an impossibility. Not impossible.
Let me make this other point, that some of the youth don't know that are in those high positions, such as there is a black woman that's in position of the Sam's Club and runs Walmart. She is in the executive office, the CEO position over Walmart. So it's that kind of power and that kind of control that we do have as African Americans. But what is going on with our youth, and this is what I had to explain to them, that they are not concerned about getting an education like we were when we were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
They were not.
Okay, excuse me, ma'am. Let me just cut in here. Yeah. Before we go on, let's just get this straight. The Fortune 500 companies they've had 15 African Americans to make it as CEO. Okay, currently we're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 right now out of the Fortune 500 companies, according to Fortune magazine, which I'm on their website right now. And looking at the pictures of the brothers that at least made it, two CEOs of the Fortune 500 companies. So there are not 1 million anything black anywhere in the Fortune 500. So with that said, we appreciate your call. Continue listening to the show, and thanks for calling.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Okay.
Caller, go ahead. You're live on the air.
Am I live?
Yes, you are,
yes,
sir.
Yes, you are. Go right ahead.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, gentlemen, this is Mr. M. I call in from time to time, listen to your show, love your show, doing a great job.
Thank you.
And one of the things I'd like to say, you know, the young lady that just, you know, got off the phone, even though her statistics were, I'd have to agree with Mr. Edwards, seemed to be somewhat flawed, I think some of her message, there was something there. And when I say that, there's a person here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Now, you've talked about, gentlemen, you know, how the educational system has basically failed our people in this city. Well, we have a superintendent who's an African-American woman.
Mm-hmm.
She's head of it. She's the head of it.
Right.
And so if we go back to the young lady before, say, well, here's the person that is the head of the Minneapolis school system, but yet the disparities continue to be worse. So what is she doing about that? When you put someone...
That's an excellent question.
...of color there, and then it continues to go downhill, well, you begin to wonder, what's their motivation? Or who are they really working for? They don't seem to not be working for their constituents. So I think I did grab a point, even though the statistics did seem to have somewhat of a hole in them.
Yeah, the statistics were very flawed, if you will.
Very skewed.
Absolutely. But, I like the analogy that you just made, that certainly we have black people at minor numbers in positions of authority and responsibility, even though she does report to a board of education, which actually has an interesting mix, which is maybe halfway reflective of the city. You had a Puerto Rican as the chairman of the board for a while. You had a couple of Caucasians. You had a Somali at one point who unfortunately died at an early age and was replaced by another. African American.
Who they named a street after a few months of being
wasn't that amazing? Van White, who was the first African American elected to the Minneapolis City Council,
yeah.
It took 20
yeah.
years to
mm-hmm.
to name a little street two blocks, and
yeah.
it took 20 years to finally put a bust of him in the rotunda of City Hall. And so,
what he did for the citizens of North Minneapolis, and here we have an individual serve for 4 months.
Right. Yeah.
He was put on a pedestal like that. Well, you know, I think what this is leading me to, Mr. Edwards and Mr. Allen, is, you know, when we talked about, you know, our leader of the Minneapolis schools, what this comes to my theory, what I call it is puppetry, okay? And what puppetry is you have the face, you have the personage of a leader, you have the person wearing the suit, coming to the meetings, presenting themselves as a leader, but you have things like, I think you mentioned, you know, Mr. Edwards, the board, like of the Minneapolis schools that really...
Yes, 9-member board now, 9 members. Mm-hmm.
Maybe pulling the strings of this particular person, so this person is maybe a puppet. My puppet theory.
So that person can continue to get that. I think it's a bonus of $70,000-$80,000 a year beyond their salary of what does the superintendent here make now? $220,000 or something like that.
My goodness.
Yes. Well compensated. I've always maintained and used to speak to the board as a activist and et cetera, that you know the superintendent and the superintendent, he or she's deputies and et cetera, should be compensated based on the graduation rate and the performance of students
mm-hmm.
in the Minneapolis public schools. Oops.
mm-hmm.
Because if you're talking in terms of what the performance is, graduation, passing the necessary test and et cetera, they maybe it should be making more like $35,000 or $40,000. You know what I mean?
Well, I have just one more comment I want to make on one of your previous comments, Mr. Edwards and Mr. Allen, about how some of the leadership only wants to deal with people from the African-American community that they're comfortable with.
Yes.
They're looking for this comfort level. Well, you know, I'm here to tell you that these people that are losing their lives over on the north side, this isn't comfortable, okay? This
Ooh.
Is not comfortable for their families. This is not comfortable for the people that they leave behind. So, I mean, it's time to sit up and take this comfortability off and get down to business here and get down to brass tacks and what needs to happen. I mean, these things are happening back-to-back now. You know, we turn around over the 4th of July weekend and we lose people there, and then it turns right around and innocent women are shot and injured and maimed. I mean, and then so they walk the streets. I'm saying this comfortability part, that has to be thrown away. This isn't comfortable anymore. I'm not comfortable.
Thank you.
Okay?
All right.
Thank you, Em.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Thank you, sir. All right. Hell of a point, Mr. Allen, comfortability.
Yeah,
we hear a lot of that coming from the corridors of power, be it City Hall, State House, and et cetera. Let me just go back to the insurance thing that you were talking about. You know, if it had been for Senator Jeff Hayden having no problem standing up, when the information was brought to him about what was happening within the black community, he was a one-man wrecking crew. In fact, I maintain that he was responsible really for the then executive director to submit her resignation. I don't think it was ever Senator Hayden's desire, if you will, to see this money put into the hands of so many incompetents in the African-American community or any other community as an elected public official sworn to uphold the Constitution, et cetera. But I know how he feels, and I'm reflecting back on some comments he made with the group that met this morning 14 days ago and was praising the fact that this kind of move was afoot. And I remembered his statements at the hearing over at the state capitol when he really chastised his own administration. You know, he didn't show any favoritism to his concern about the fact that the governor had been, you know, kind of sleep at the switch, okay? But now the governor made some moves and tried to correct this. But I just wanted to remind people, if it had not been for Senator Hayden, we really would have been in the lurch, if you will. Just want to kind of do that. What do we have call-wise, Don? Because the phone lines aren't open. We're talking in terms of the violence. And boy, M just talked in terms of, I like what he said. You know, the people that are being shot and dying, you know, I don't think they're concerned about, you know, how comfortable folks are about people who will stand up and talk in terms of the circumstances and situations that are causing this mayhem. I just don't think they would tell you. I don't think the three black women that were gunned down this morning here in Minneapolis while in their backyard, I just don't think that they would tell you that they're concerned about who speaks for right and wrong. You know what I'm saying, Don?
Oh, I agree 100%. I agree 100% with you on that. And we have another caller here.
Let's get him. Let's get him in.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Would that be me?
Yes, sir. That'd be you, sir. Go right ahead.
Oh, goody. Oh, I've heard so much. I learned so much from listening to this show. I even heard some throwback stuff. I heard African American Men Project.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that show, Tim Gary Cunningham on that one. Two things. One is that, once again, we're reactionary. You know, we're reacting to the violence. We are reacting once again to, you know, everything. I think it goes back to maybe to one of you last year's show, that I remember getting some very, very, very good information on viable organizations that represent black people in the first place. I mean, now you want to sit down at the table because people are getting shot. But if we had viable organizations, we would already, you know, be prepared to address issues, you know, of this nature and such. But now everybody wants to sit down. And for a while, I was like, well, you know, people want to get paid to help their own people. You know, everybody got a proposal. Everybody got, you know, it's really a demand. Pay me to go help my people. Help, you know. Back to the African American Men's Project when they had us going before the commissioners, Hennepin County commissioners, and people were coming with telling them, I have a PhD in this and this. That. I mean, and this was no paying job or anything. And they were getting their, you know, peacock strutting in front of these white folk while we was downtown. And I remember I told them, I said, you know, 15 years ago I was out here in the streets, you know, doing wrong and this, that, and the other, and I'm not here to ask you for your permission to help my brothers. I'm going to do it anyway. And I was quoted all in the paper the next day. You know, I was quoted in the paper the next day. And so,
as if you were
today,
possibly a belligerent Negro.
You see what I mean? And that's why I was going to tell you guys, I'm really uncomfortable with talking on the show that's hosted by one like Don Allen. Can't you guys find a compromised Negro to host the show?
Because we're co-hosts.
I'm really uncomfortable with this. However, the other thing I wanted to address is that, would y'all please stop this Chicago mess, that this is outsiders doing this, these niggas from Chicago, da, 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 da. You know, 25 years ago, when I came here, people from Minneapolis was telling me to go back to Chicago. They were telling other people to go back to Cleveland, Ohio, you know, when the real outsiders are the ones who's opened up business in the community, the ones who won't give you, let you return your merchandise with or without a receipt, the ones who are selling guns in the back of their store, the ones who are buying the food stamps and prostituting our women, those outsiders who open up businesses in the community and they don't give a dime to your church, your community, your youth groups to try and help offset this violence. Instead, they're sitting there selling blunts across the street from the church and, you know, they got young people hanging out in front of there, and this is where the killings is going on at. And so people keep talking about outsiders. This is from Chicago, and this is all of you outsiders, Negro. You don't own
nothing here.
You don't
That's
own
right.
nothing here. Come talking.
This originally was the land of the red man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. 25 years ago, when we came from these other cities, had you sat down and got together with us and talked about creating wealth and power like some outsiders have. What did you say? It took 5 months before they named the street after this brother? 5 months.
You're talking about the Somali brother? Yeah, 5 months.
Yes, sir.
And they,
yes,
they
sir.
Named
peace
the
be upon
the beloved
soul.
Van
peace
White, the first African-American city councilman. It took 20 years to get a two-block area named, a street named after him. And it took the same 20 years to commission somebody to do a bust of him and put it in City Hall. Yeah.
All
right, appreciate it.
Put it all together. No viable organization.
Let me say something on the record, because you jog memory, and I just kind of laugh. See, I'm old enough and been around long enough as an activist. See, I can remember when the first outsider thing began to come into play here in the middle 1960s. And the group of persona non grata African-Americans, for those that really been around, such as me, was the black folk coming here from Omaha. Okay? Now, that was before both of y'all's time. And then a couple years later, it was the black folk coming here from Gary, Indiana. In fact, I'll close you out with this one. 1972, Time Magazine has a picture on the front page of that edition of then-Governor Wendell Anderson. He had one of them plaid shirts on. He was holding up a walleye. And the article was Land of Prosperity, right? And in the article, they said that one of the greatest problems, though, were the people coming here from Gary, Indiana, and Detroit and places like that. And I thought back, well, 10 years ago was black folk coming here from Omaha. But the key was some of my mentors had told me 15 years before that it used to be gentlemen back in the 1930s, Negroes was coming here from Mississippi. All right? Take care, Colin.
Wow. Thank you for that, Mr. Edwards. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Phone lines open, Mr. Allen. We got about 27, 28 minutes. We're going to the top
call.
Of the hour. We're
definitely,
going to 10.
Yep. Yes, we are. We have another call. Go ahead.
All right, let's get the caller.
Okay. Who's calling?
You're live on the air. 7936.
Yes, Donald. I was the person that you hung up on about the 500-foot company, and I went back and did my research, and I was incorrect on first thing. I meant to say that there was 1.9 million African Americans that owned their own businesses in the United States.
Okay. That sounds more reasonable.
Okay. And then there's 100 of us that own top positions in the 500-foot company. Okay, so therefore, like I said, it is up to the youth to start putting their lives in pushing forward to wanting something out of their lives. See, a lot of the youth that I see that is hanging out on West Broadway, they're between 18 and 24 years of age. Some of them don't have an education. Some of them, a lot of them dropped out of school. They can't read and write. But whose fault is that? You know, if mom and dad is sending them to school every day, or if they're looking over their children to go to school every day, then if they should be responsible to go to school. Now, when I try to talk to some of the younger kids about taking on responsibility of their own education, you know what one girl told me today?
What's that?
She didn't give a S-H-I-T. Okay, so here it is. Like, you know, in the last few days I've been talking about what's going on in West Broadway. On Monday, there was a young man that got beat up by other young men. He pulled out a gun and just started shooting up West Broadway. Now, firing a gun, didn't know how to control his weapon. There could have been a lot of youth that could have been out. A lot of people could have got killed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But where was the leaders at that time period, or the police at that time period?
That's a good question, and I would suggest that's a question certainly that should be asked of them. I can tell you a couple places that you can call. One would be Shiloh, who is the staging area along with V.J. Smith's operation on the south side for the Faith Patrol, which should have been on the streets. And then as it pertains to the police, you should call, because you were on West Broadway, you should call Councilman Vong Yang, who is also chairman of the Public Safety Committee, which the police department reports to. And you should have him facilitate a call between yourself, he, and the chief of the police department to answer that question, where were the police? Because we are one of the most crime-ridden precincts on one hand and one of the most underrepresented as it pertains to police personnel on the other. And so I'm just, we're giving you the names here. That's the purpose of good journalists. We're giving you the names of a couple people you need to talk to, and they certainly need to answer that question. And when they do, feel free to give us a call back and tell us what they told you.
Yep.
Okay. Now,
okay.
The other solution that I wanted to talk about, hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You're still on.
Okay. Now, why is it not that the property owners that have criminal activity, that they know that the drug dealers are selling drugs out of their homes, why can't they be fined or have their property taken away?
Well, what happens is that the police department, who would keep the reports, the incident reports, as they are called, on that kind of activity, that would have to also include intelligence information from the intelligence entities, starting with the police, the ATF, the DEA, and et cetera. That's a doggone good question, and actually the responsibility is, again, in the ward. Need to talk to the councilman in the wards that you're possibly talking about, council of Ward 5, Ward 4, Ward 3, if you will, Ward 8, and Ward 6 and 9 in South Minneapolis. That is a good question, because the council person is supposed to keep track of the code violations that would go on. You say people selling drugs and et cetera, and you're absolutely correct, out of their homes. Many of these homes, by the way, are Section 8. And if you sell dope out of your house and you're on Section 8, you're supposed to not only be prosecuted, but you're supposed to lose your Section 8 for in perpetuity. In other words, never again are you to receive Section 8. So you need to, on this particular matter that you have information on, give your council person a call and ask them to, and give them the information, give them the address. Where the drug operations are going, call the police department. Call Inspector Jose, that's spelled J-O-S-S. He is the commander of the 4th Precinct there in North Minneapolis. Call him, give him the information, let his special teams and drug enforcement people and DEA get out there and do their job. And maybe
yeah,
that will reduce
so much
some of the violence.
And
good observation.
So
we appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. We
all
have
right.
caller, Ms. Edwards.
All right, let's go right ahead.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Yes, go ahead,
this
please.
Is Marvin. Hey, Ron. Hey, Don.
Hey, Marvin, how you doing, buddy? All right.
Okay, how are you guys doing?
Real good. What
Great.
You got for us?
Oh, I'm sorry I tuned in late, but I just wanted to call and say I really appreciate, again, the show and the light that you guys are shining on the community, and just really kind of, I think, providing us with enough information and stuff like that to just kind of help us through what I think is a real tumultuous time. I think it's unlike anyone we've seen in the past, in that before there was, I thought there was hope, you know, even though
Ooh, okay.
we had a lot of people, you know, acting out and engaging in, you know, certainly unlawful, illegal, and violent behavior. I always thought that there was hope because there were things that, you know, were available to people if they decided that, you know, gangbanging wasn't their thing, or they wanted to change their life, or, you know, they wanted to go into church and change their life. I felt that those things were available back then. It's not feeling that way now. It feels like we've really slid a lot further down, you know, over the last few years. And the fact that, you know, you guys continue to provide information and give us that critical data so that people can at the very least understand the dire straits that this community is in, and that, you know, the information you guys, you know, share with us about, you know, everybody's going to have to get on board with this thing. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
just going to require the entire village to get on board, like the meeting today. You know, there should have been standing room, especially from the Northsiders. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That
Let me just say this. Marvin, that one of our first callers was Coach Larry McKenzie, who did a very
right.
good in-depth analysis of the meeting. And I know I certainly appreciated your comments. I know there was a certain level of discomfort in the meeting today when you talked in terms of the role of those of us in the Fourth Estate. but you were right on. You were absolutely correct. When you talk about what it is that, you know, is broadcast, if you will, what it is that is, you know, identified as a justifiable exploitation because, you know, their sponsorship. Your point was well taken. I hope that people are able, as Coach McKenzie said, put their egos aside and really reflect strongly on the comments that you made about, the kind of message that is sent out, particularly through the music and et cetera and what it does, and that folks really take up the offer of Dr. Hayden, when he talked about that they were offering services, if you will, because we've unfortunately have some young people out here that are very, very confused about the importance of life and tranquility. And I know that I appreciated what it was that you said because it needs to be said even more. It's all a part of what was said in this morning's paper, that we as the African-American community must start taking responsibility for things that are going on if we're talking in terms of saving our future, okay, because I always have an expression on my television program, a race of people that will soon be referred to and have gone the way of the American buffalo, extinct. And I just don't have any commitment to becoming extinct, okay, you know.
Yeah.
But your observations are extremely keen, and I just hope that this gathering that took place today, second one, they're broken down into committees, as you know, and et cetera. I hope that we can at least hold the line and come up with some solutions, if you will, and we will need people like yourself and others who are critical thinkers. Because I tell you, if we don't, Spike Moss said something at the conclusion of the meeting, and he talked in terms, gentlemen, of the flow and the plan that's afoot. In some places, it's already rabbit city, such as Detroit, et cetera.
Right.
The whole thing about the introduction of significant of amounts of kilos and kilos of heroin into our community. Yeah. And Spike Moss made some interesting observations about how this battle is being fought right now. And I do this, Marvin, and close with you as a part of, you know, that's why I like being a historian. I take everyone back to the statement before the California Assembly by a woman by the name of Maxine Waters in 1985, when she talked in terms of the plan that was afoot involving the United States government, and particularly the CIA, to provide and to bring in to the African-American community very toxic drugs, and specifically crack cocaine and heroin.
Right.
Maxine Waters, who is now one of the longest-serving congresswomen in the United States House of Representatives. I always tell people that at that time she was a assemblywoman from South Central L.A., but her reflections and predictions, gentlemen, on what was getting ready to happen to black America. And then I take us all the way back for those you younger men, if you will. I take us back to those same kinds of enunciations by people like Malcolm X and others, okay, who were silenced because they were talking about what America's plan really was for the survival of the African American. So, Marvin, I appreciate it.
Okay, lastly, Ron, I just want to say, and for this community, that I trained under you, Mahmoud Agate, Spike Moss, and a number of other people, and, you know, I am me because I had men like you guys that, you know, surrounded me and a lot of the other guys that are still doing well with their lives. So just a big a shout-out to you guys. Thanks for all that you've given me, and I appreciate you kind of validating what I had said because I felt kind of bad, but I just am not going to kind of hold back now. This is it's critical. You're right. It's kids are dying, and I won't watch it. So thanks a lot, and I appreciate
all right.
You giving me that support,
bro. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, Sam, we've got about 13 minutes again.
Yeah, and
a lot of calls coming
want,
in, so that's what our priority is. Go ahead.
We have a couple more calls, but I need to insert this in here. You know, we're talking about the marginalization of the community, but, you know, earlier in the production meeting, we had talked about the current controversy with Hennepin County and a CD chemical dependency treatment center out in Richfield called New Perspectives, and how the white organization, the White Treatment Center, Park Avenue, this year so far has had over 300 approvals and referrals from Hennepin County, and New Perspectives has had 4. And so there's a big disparity there going on with what's happening at Hennepin County and the marginalization of the black body in need of some kind of assistance, or in this case, health, mental health, behavioral health, and just all around knowledge. And so it just, you know, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I know you'll correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Edwards, but we have not seen an African-American commissioner since the inception of the Hennepin County Commission, correct?
There has never been an African-American or any other person of color ever elected to the Hennepin County 7-member Board of Commissioners.
Okay, so
always seems
to
be just enough every 10 years, enough gerrymandering to make sure that happens. In fact, one of the most ridiculous districts is the one that was served, is currently being served by Linda Higgins, and prior to that, a couple of others, if you will, Mark Stangline comes to mind,
Mark Stangline,
which stretches from St. Anthony, the city of St. Anthony to the east, all the way out to the other side of Golden Valley, with North Minneapolis basically and the black population at that time basically being suppressed. One of the doggondest, what we used to call in doing gerrymandering, what we would call a dragon. Okay? To your question, historically, you're absolutely correct. The Hennepin County Board of Commissioners has never had they've never had really a person of color. Now, somebody can jump up and say that some white person that was on there 20 years ago happened to be a Native American, but the Native Americans putting into that because they would tell you that you need to come up with your quantum as it pertains to how much Native American blood you had and what your certification number was. That's how we stopped white folks from playing like they were Native Americans and trying to get into the fire and the police department. Used to tell them to show, first of all, their tribal affiliation and lineage and et cetera, and then how much quantum blood, quote-unquote, they had. We got rid of a lot of pretenders, if you will.
Yeah, and that's a very important observation that you made there about that. And these commissioners, because if they have not dealt with the African-American community as someone on their as a peer, then they have no respect for us. And that goes all the way down the line. I mean, you're hard-pressed to find anybody in power of color in any department in Hennepin County, as far as I'm concerned. I've been to almost every floor of the building, just snooping around. And I'm like, wow, this is incredible.
That's absolutely correct. In fact, I think we have to go back about 20 years when there was a African-American who did head up a department. In fact, I'll tell you something that's interesting, and I know our good friend because I know he doesn't appreciate it, but William English's current wife, who is a very bright person, was slated to be the director of corrections for the for Hennepin County, which was a very powerful position. The one, Jan Smaby, see, I'm taking folks way back, was getting ready to step aside, and lo and behold, they pulled something. When they got through Freddie Davis, which was her name at that time, and she's now Freddie Davis English, found herself pushed right out the door. And we've never had anybody in a position of, you know, being an assistant, deputy or et cetera. Freddie Davis English, at that time she was Freddie Davis, eminently qualified to have become the director of corrections for Hennepin. See, that meant she would have been over the workhouse and, you know, those kinds of jails and facilities. And the decision was made. What was said then 20 years ago, time wasn't right.
We want to get to these last couple
ago,
callers. We got
go
a couple
ahead.
More
call.
Calls we want to get to. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please. Hello. Okay, we'll try the next one here. Caller, you're live on the air.
5450. You're live on the air. Okay, I think they just want to listen, Mr. Edwards.
Okay, that's great. That's great. That's great. Any more calls? But again, Freddie Davis. I want to remind those of some of our leaders, if you will, some now passed from the American scene. You know, in other words, they went over. You know, they passed over to the other side. And I'll never forget how Freddie was. She was left kind of to hang, if you will, when the decision was made that she would not. Succeed. Jans maybe, okay? And in fact, that history is right there for all them folks that like to play with the computers and et cetera. And it was quite a stunning blow to the African-American community. You know, it kind of reminds me of the thing when Pam Alexander was not appointed to the federal bench, and there had been so much celebration in the African-American community. You know, that's a discussion that folks refuse to have about what happened to Pam Alexander's appointment or the recommendation to appoint her to the federal bench at the same time that now current Chief Judge Michael Davis, who is a good friend, but both of them were to have been appointed. Mr. Allen, I don't know if you and others even remember or know that. And
okay.
Pam Alexander was shot through the grease because a decision was made that she was not the right kind of African-American.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Pam Alexander, who should be sitting on the federal bench right now. But anyways, this is a little part of history to keep us going. We're down to what, Don, about the last 4 or 5 minutes? Your observation, where are we at? What do you think's happening?
Well, we're going to have to watch closely, Mr. Edwards, the city of Minneapolis and the mayor, Mayor Betsy Hodges, and the police chief, but also keep an eye on the African-American Leadership Forum. Because they are developing Six Sigma teams to address a couple things going on under the leadership of this Christopher Stewart, who reminds me of a character from The Hobbit. And so we have to watch them very closely and overall, because what they're doing is Betsy Hodges and police, Janae Harto, are coming into North Minneapolis as part of publicity stunts. Okay, that's all it is. So they get in the paper. You saw that they came in the other day. The next morning, every channel, you know, had them blasted on. And this is not solving any problems. Also, as you mentioned about an hour and a half ago at the beginning of the show, is we need to find out what the static is on the mayor's appointed collaboration to the African-American community, Sherman Patterson and them folks down there, and find out actually what they're doing. And I had a solution that I threw out there. I said, you know what? Let's do something different. We need, like, Coach McKenzie. Let's do something different, you know. Let's deal with some different people. Let's stop this funding that they keep giving out this money to the same people, and we keep getting the same results. Okay, let's not give another nickel to Stair Step Foundation. Let's not give another nickel to Alfred Babington Johnson over there in the sky. Jerry McAfee and New Salem, Bishop Powell, and the usual suspects. The Urban League, and I bet you in a year things will turn around because people that really want to do the work will come forward and they will have a plan. There's no one now, Mr. Edwards, that really has the eye of the tiger, you know, that they just know that, hey, oh, wow, you a Democrat, you will get some money, and you'll be able to buy a nice car, you know, take your family to J.D. Hoyt on Friday night or your mistress and do the damn thing. And while the community out there is suffering. So that's my assessment.
Clearly about it. And by the way, I find it rather questionable why the mayor did not on yesterday choose to go to the hospital to visit the woman shot and wounded on the occasion of her friend being shot and killed. And I'm really wondering if the mayor and Sherman Patterson and others visited the hospital today to visit with the three African-American women gunned down this morning, at least to pay their respects, to talk with the family and provide fellowship. You know, I bet you it didn't happen. But also I wonder who our leaders were that went to the hospital and visited with the family. So anyways, hey, it's all a part of being a big leader. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don, good show, man. Let's let James Brown take us home.
Let's do that. Thanks. You've been listening to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.